Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Alex Schumacher. Home has been a big theme for us recently here at the podcast. We've looked at hometowns, and we've looked at homes as places for affection and love. And well, now this week, we're continuing on with that theme by looking at the concept of homegrown. By that, we mean is things made with your own two hands. It can be scrappy and perfect, but, well, it's homemade. And, you know, that makes it all the better. Rice, musicals, house shows, and more here on Real College Podcast. What could be more homegrown than food? I mean, literally, it grows. And here in Minnesota, there has been a long, long tradition of growing native wild rices. Now, a few weeks ago, there was a wild rice festival here in the Twin Cities, so we sent producer Ben Hallam out there to check it out.
When I think Minnesota grown, one of the first things I think of is wild rice. It's one of Minnesota's foremost native crops, and people here have been growing it and gathering it for generations. To find out more about wild rice and the culture that surrounds it, the Real College Podcast went to the Wild Rice Festival in Roseville, Minnesota. Near the entrance to the festival, one of the first activities we spotted was Native American flute playing and storytelling.
That's just a deadlock. And then he just laid there. He didn't move a muscle under all that debris. And pretty soon, another great Christian.
Don't
I don't think that's a lock. I think that's a dead animal. Great Christian, dead animal. They're going to eat the dead animal. And Ace is going to just be staying quiet. And so one of the great Christians, listen, you go up there and check to see if it's a dead animal. So the great Christian went up the hill, and he looked at it, and he said, yeah, it's a dead animal. It's a raccoon.
In the picnic area of the park where the festival took place, the Little Thunderbirds drum and dance troupe performed. As we watch the dancing, we notice that nearby a member of the Rice family had come from northern Minnesota to demonstrate wild rice preparation and cooking techniques. I spoke with one member of the Rice family, and he explained some of the techniques involved in cooking wild rice, and also told me a little bit more about his own engagement with wild rice in his past.
What am I doing? I'm doing right now a parching system that was done back in the old days. When I say the old days, I'm eating days like maybe the 1900s, early 1900s, when they had a big kettle, a big iron kettle, and they would throw the rice that they got off from the lake after two or three days of drying into the kettle, and then brown the hull that's on the seed of the rice. Not much difference. Not much difference at all. The only difference that we do is that we now have a machine that has a 50-gallon drum or larger. Ours happens to be larger. I think ours is like about a 70 or 80-gallon drum. And it has a motor that turns the paddles inside. And we still use the old traditional wood fire. We believe that that's what also gives it a nutty flavor. We're not sure, but that's our belief, and So therefore we use, you know, the wood fires to keep it going. After you get it parched, after you get the rice parched, then it goes to the thrashing machine. Now, once that hull is off the grain of the rice, you have to find a way to get rid of the hull, which is over the rice seed itself. That, in turn, is called a winnowing. Once you dance it out and get it so that the hulls are separated from the seed, now you have to get rid of the hulls, so therefore they put it in a, what they call a winnowing basket. And the winnowing basket is made out of birch, and that's the only thing that will not bounce the rice grains out of the... I mean, you can use something else like a pan or something, and it don't work. The birch bark seems to be the only thing that absorbs that hit of the rice coming back down once you throw it into the air so that the air and wind can take the hulls and dust out of the rice. What you have left is the rice itself, the actual rice itself, and that's the edible part of it. Since I was about 8 or 9 years old, they introduced me to the rice camp, and in the rice camp, we lived right by the lake in our little tar paper shacks, or some people had tents, but that was in the 50s. And that's where we learned how to rice. You went swimming a couple of times and falling out of the boat, and that, again, in those days it was canoes that we tried to use. A lot of people didn't have canoes, but we still used a flat bottom boats back then, and then it changed over to law, which said that you will use a canoe, and the canoes do not break the stocks of the rice as bad as a flat bottom boat. So I can understand that, and everybody seemed to be okay with that. So now it's canoe, strictly canoe, and I've been doing this for a few years. But I don't know how far back this goes. How far? I mean, many generations of rices have done this, and so now it's left to us, and it's a dying art. I don't believe the generation that's coming up under us, I don't believe they're going to do this. It's a hard job. It's a dirty job. So maybe that's one of the reasons why.
For the Real College Podcast, I'm Ben Hallam.
Now, while food might be something we usually associate with a homegrown vibe, musical theater is not. When we think of musical theater, we think elaborate costumes, big sets, lots of space, and, well, lots of money involved. Now, one group here at the University of Minnesota is working to, well, build a musical from the ground up. Jackson Calhoun has more.
Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of my podcast. My name is Jackson Calhoun, and the subject for this segment of the podcast is about artists in Minneapolis, focused primarily on students at the U who are in the community working on their own craft, just doing their own thing. And my first guest today, do you want to introduce yourself, Sophia?
Hi, I'm Sophia Nwanakowali. I'm the director of Spring Awakening here at the U, produced by Musicals, Inc., the club I founded with my friend, colleague, I guess, MLY. She's not here today. It's just me, but yeah.
Awesome. So, Sophia, I first did meet Emma in my intro to tech and design class last semester in spring, and she brought up auditions for Spring Awakening, and then at auditions and callbacks is when I met you. And I remember just really admiring just seeing how Emma was just out there, just really wanted to get this project started, and how the two of you were working together to do that. So, first off, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you two meet, and what got you into trying to do this?
Emma and I's relationship started first as just like friends, because we met each other in high school, And we were both super involved in like music programs at our high school. I did a lot of musical theater growing up, not as much in high school, but I was friends with thespians, and we both were in choir, she did orchestra. But when we went to college, first semester I actually wasn't at the U due to a long string of events, but she was, and she kind of had hatched this plan to have a musical club here, because to those who aren't aware, the U doesn't really have a musical, I don't know, I wouldn't even call it like a musical community, because a musical theater community, because they do, but they only do a show every 4 years, and she wanted to change that, and I was like, yeah, I'm super on board to change that. So when I got here, spring semester of 2018, I decided to kind of help her make her dreams come true, and we started this club, co-founders. So now we're like business partners and friends, which is really cool.
That's really awesome. I'm working with you guys in Spring Awakening right now, and it's just seeing the work that you both are just putting into the show. I could definitely tell, at least from Emma's perspective, definitely, that it's a lot to manage, because I know that the two of you are just doing everything by yourselves, and starting this all on your own, like you're starting your own little company, and you wanted to take that initiative to start this yourselves. Like, what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced, and what are the challenges, but also like, what is there in this community? What is there that's also been really helpful to you guys to get your company started?
Well, it's kind of crazy because musical theater is, and just theater in general, is really expensive. So we've had to deal with a lot of the hardest part of getting a club like this going is kind of just finding funding for it in the first place, but also finding fundraising and finding the people isn't the hard part. It's the money, because tons of people are interested in like helping us with like manual labor or acting or stage managing a set design. But it's crazy how much we spent on like rights and props. Like if we could rent out storage space, that would be really cool. Unfortunately, it's really expensive. So one of the weird behind the scenes things that nobody would know unless they were like one of our cast members is we have to keep all of our props in our tiny apartment room. So we just have like crates and like, I don't know, benches sitting in our tiny room where, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way, because if we didn't do that, we wouldn't be able to have props. But it's like just tiny things like that that you wouldn't think about that cost a lot of money and take up space, I guess. And it's cool because there's so many other opportunities in this city that we get because we're doing a show, because this city is so great for theater and musicals actually. But money is tough. Money is a real thing that you have to deal with in theater.
Yeah, personally, like I've been working with people over the summer too who have been independent artists trying to do that, and students trying to do it at the U. Like I know a lot of others who are trying to do the same thing. So, but I guess another big thing that I'm curious about is, aside from funding and aside from all that, what is like, do you and Emma, do you think you guys have like a vision for what you want this to keep being, or like, do you have like a mission or something that you want to accomplish, or is this just a passion project, or just what was it exactly? Like, what do you want to see this become?
Well, this is Emma's like baby. Emma really, I mean, I don't want to discredit the work that I put into this musical, because I have put in a lot of work. But Emma saw this club for what it can be in the future to this university, and we see that as being this, like, we don't see it as it ever leaving, really. I think the only way to have musicals be more prevalent here, or the only way that can be possible, is through student organization, just for money purposes, because they do cost a lot of money. We have big dreams and goals, and we hope that with re-elections, we get like different artists or different types of people directing our shows, and different presidents will create, hopefully, like more efficient ways of running our club. And we firmly believe, right now we're presidents and directors because we founded it, but actually this week we're having re-elections for our next semester for our club. So we might not have the same president next semester, which is kind of like scary, but also really cool. And as for same with the director and like our board, we just really want people to be involved in this process and like be artistic and live through art and through theater and through musical theater specifically. Yeah, we have huge goals. I mean, I don't know how quickly we can meet them, hopefully within like 5 years, but honestly, the sky's the limit with this particular group too. Mm-hmm. Just very driven individuals in our cast, which you know, Jackson, because you are a part of our cast.
Thank you. It's great just to see again the things that you guys are doing for it, and I'm really excited to see what the group could become as well. And I'm also just curious, like I see like Emma puts in a lot into this, and like you said, it's her baby, and just like, I know, like you said, you don't want to discredit yourself, absolutely, but I'm just curious, like, as yourself, like, do you see yourself in this group, like, do you see yourself as an artist? Is this, like, a way for you to give into the community, or just how do you see this, how do you, Sophia, see this project, and what's something that you hope anyone who sees this, or like, sees the show when it comes out, or like, wants to participate in the future, what is something that you hope you've given to it that people take away from it?
I owe so much of my personality and my experiences and my happiness to musical theater. Like, and that's why when Emma kind of invited me to help with this project, I knew I couldn't say no, because I felt I was almost like indebted to it in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not gonna be a board member because I'm not running for anything next semester. I felt like I owed it to myself and to all theater lovers out there to kind of be a part of this. And so I hope when people see Spring Awakening, it'll be at Kaufman from November 1st through 4th to people who are interested in going. I hope that when you see it, you also, whether or not you were like a thespian in high school or you just were like super interested in musical theater at one point, or it's new to you, that you feel like the love and the appreciation that all of us in the cast feel for theater and the arts in general, because that's like the whole point of performing, is so we can feel the appreciation kind of like exuding off ourselves and like our beings.
Awesome. I think that's a really good point, and thank you so much for sharing that. Like, definitely, theater's been the biggest part of my life for such a long time, and I definitely get what you mean by just, it's just such a great space, and just the people that love doing this is just really something amazing just to see, and just like the fact that we're trying to start this all on our own, and just to really say, hey, we have something we want to share, and we have something that we want to give to people. And I just really think it's awesome how, you know, I think another thing that I've taken away from this so far, and the thing that I hope people can take away from, especially seeing just everything that you and Emma have put into it, and one thing that I know the cast has definitely taken away, is just how much work has to go into something like this, something that you really love to do, and just, like, it's really just taught me personally that just, like, if you really have something that you do want to do, like, you can make it happen. And like, especially Sophia, one thing I love just about your attitude personally is just like, I see Emma sometimes, and just she's sometimes worrying about all these things, and like she's worrying about all these logistics. But then you come, but then I see you walk in, and you just seem like you just have complete, just gracious control over the situation, and just like you really bring this atmosphere to everyone that just makes it, at least to me, I feel like it's something that's very special, and I can tell how much you really want to get in with everyone. I can tell that really does mean a lot to you, and that means a lot to the rest of us too, definitely. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Just have to all those who are interested in pursuing art while they're at the university, or even interested in being our club, whether that's directing or set design or acting, just have faith in the process. Like, obviously worrying is important, because it's a very, even though it's creative, it can be a meticulous craft. Just like have faith that everything will work out, and work hard and be friends and be kind and all those good things. Yeah.
By the way, she already said it, but November 1st through 4th at Kaufman is Spring Awakening. But how have you seen yourself grow so far through this process?
I've seen myself have to, I've had to be very much more organized about not only my time, but other people's time, because we're dealing with so many cast members in the show. Also money, taxes. I've learned so much about taxes.
It's That's important.
Really fun. Nonprofit stuff I've learned a lot about. Again, very thrilling stuff here. But yeah, I've learned a lot about people too, and auditioning is like was a weird thing to do for sure. There's like so many things you when because my experience with musical theater has always been as an actress, so like doing the directing aspect but also doing like the publicizing aspect and also doing like the choreography, not that Emma and I really do choreography. We have wonderful John Patterson doing that for us, but you know, just like being involved in all aspects of theater, musical theater is like really overwhelming, but also so exciting at the same time. So yeah.
I agree. Thank you so much, Sophia. I really appreciate everything you have to say. Thank you so much for being my first guest. Really appreciate that too. And yeah, thank you all so much for tuning in, and we'll be back here in the future. And keep supporting your local artists and stay up to date on everything that's theater, and check out Spring Awakening when it comes to Kauffman in November. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day.
Finally, if you're in your 20s and live here in the Twin Cities area, you've probably heard of house shows. These are full-on shows with bands, performers, everything, thrown in someone's living room or basement. They take on all different styles and genres, and Lizzie Ritchie has more.
Something that I personally love about Minneapolis is the music scene that exists that is currently growing like no other. A part of the scene is a cultivation for local artists and a sense of community that exists within home concerts, or more commonly referred to as house shows. It's something that is a really big part of what makes Minneapolis so unique and the growing urge to take something great here and make it even better. Today, I'm sitting down with Sam Walsh, another fellow student at the U of M and also house show attendee, to share his experiences with this exceeding culture of home concerts. So, I wanted to begin with asking, when would you say you started going to house shows, and how often?
Oh, well, I'll never forget when I transferred down, that would have been my sophomore year, the first house show I ever went to was a Halloween party, and the Florists were actually playing before that was before Luke Michaels turned that into a band that was playing venues, and I did that once and then just got hooked on it, and I'd never stopped, and so I think that was about 2 years ago now. So yeah, how often do I go? It really depends, because house shows, the venues are always changing, and it's a very dynamic scene. It's all like some house shows are getting house venues are shutting down, and some are popping up. But I would say I probably go about 2 to 3 times a month. So about once a week, I go to a house show if I can find one.
What would you say is your most memorable experience at a house show, or like best show that you've seen?
I've seen a lot of really, really good shows. Sometimes the shows that you don't think are going to be memorable end up being the most memorable shows. So like, because the thing is at a house show is that it's not always about the band that's there. Because it's not like at a venue where it's just like people go to see a performance. People go to like talk and mingle, I guess. I don't know if I have a specific amazing house show. One of the most recent one that comes to mind was when I saw Happy Children at the drop-off, and there were 100 people in this basement just screaming the words to Sentimental, and it was absolutely beautiful. So I'll say that one.
That's a really good answer. Have you ever thought about hosting house shows? Have you ever done that, or has it ever come to mind?
Yeah, I would have, in another life, I would have done that. The hardest thing about house shows, people don't understand, is getting the 6 people that that live with you to want to do it as well. The Paper House is so amazingly beautiful to me because there are 11 people that live in that house, and they're all on the same page, and all 11 of them wake up every Sunday morning when everybody else wakes up in their clean beds and clean houses, and they wake up and have to clean up beer cans and whatever. So I would love to do it, but I'm kind of happy that I'm not doing it. You know, it's very bittersweet, I guess. Or mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you say, like, drew you into this scene of going to house shows?
Sure. I think the energy, mm-hmm. I guess. There's an inclusivity of it that really fosters a creative environment like no other. You're forcing, if you want to go to the house show, you have to know someone. It's not like it's at 7th Street, you know what I mean? So you have to know someone in the band, or you have to know someone at the house, and so or another creative that's going. And so then you get there, and there's just this, like, this energy in the air that just carries, I guess, because, you know, you'll be up in the kitchen talking to other creatives, and there's a band downstairs playing, and they're from New York, and you've never heard of them, and there's so much potential as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely a very unique feeling to going to house shows and whatnot. Have you ever been to any house shows outside of Minneapolis anywhere?
That's actually a great question. I have not, actually. I went to Duluth my first year, and I went to two house shows up there. Both of them were punk shows. That was via the, what's it called? There's a specific group up there, but it's just like this hardcore group of punk rockers. Very, very different than down here. Mm-hmm. But no, other than that, no, the majority of them have been in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm from Milwaukee, and there's a hardcore scene. I think that's like what it's called, where there's a lot of punk shows, and that's mm-hmm. normally what the house shows were like in other places. So I think mm-hmm. definitely like unique to Minneapolis for it being more of like a hub for like centralized music and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, we have house shows here that are, I've been to pop house shows, right? That's so weird. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the whole new idea of having it be more than just a house show. I mean, were you at Le Grand Fest or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Where it was just that giant, like, there's five bands and then there's also 10 painters, right? And then there's five people making clothing, and there's people doing modeling photo shoots, and very, very quickly it's like, I think Minneapolis has created a weird scene where we have these expectations now for some houses. I don't know, it's just very, very weird here, because in Duluth it was just, you know, punk rock, that was it. There was no art involved besides the music, so yeah.
Thank you. Any final thoughts?
No, go to house shows if you can, and bring a friend.
Well, that's all for Real College Podcast this week. Thank you to Ben, Jackson, and Lizzie for their work on these stories. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Nathan Fervoy, Liv Riggins, Ben Hallam, and Lizzie Ritchie. It is edited by me, Alex Schumacher. All episodes of Real College Podcast can be found online at radiok.org or on Apple Podcasts. Speaking of Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review if you enjoyed the episode of the show, or I guess even if you didn't. That's all for Real College Podcast this week. Tune in next week to hear more stories, but this time from the world of high fashion.